Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
No comment.
This week, by popular demand, we are bringing back Horse and Man by Charles Spencer Marge Phillips, published 1869. Thank you to Rosamund Ten, Floofy B, and Kirsty for writing in to demand more horse, please.
Your pleas have been heard, and we deliver to you horse.
More horse.
More horse.
Last time we covered the introduction and the first chapter. Now we move on to chapter 2, The Hand.
This is about horses.
It sure is.
Horses don't have hands.
Oh, ye of little faith.
No, I mean, I know that.
Oh, ye of small dreams.
Okay, tell me about the horse's hands.
Previously on Horse and Man, we mastered step 1, sit on horse.
Debatable, but sure.
Now we will master step 2, use hand on horse.
Oh, I don't like that already.
In Charles Spencer March Phillips' words, "You are still very far from being a good horseman. So far, indeed, that you are likely, if you now stop short in your education, to become a singularly clumsy and dangerous horseman, because you have acquired strength and confidence without acquiring skill. In fact, the only conceivable objection to the plan of teaching horsemanship by successive steps is the possibility that the pupil may be so perverse as to think the first step sufficient."
You fucking perverts.
You fucking perverts thinking you know all about horses?
You fucking horse creeps! Get out of my horse school!
"The novice who studies seat and hand together is at least kept out of premature risks by his instinctive fear of falling off. But no man is so likely to kill his horse and hurt himself as a bold and firm rider who has never learnt to manage his bridle."
Wow.
Yeah, so if you don't learn how to use hand on horse, your horse will literally die.
Technically, you use hand on bridle, not on horse.
Nope, use hand on horse. "How to control horse with bridle," according to Charles Spencer March Phillips. "No horse can, or at least no horse will, execute any pace without stretching and relaxing his neck, or crest, in time to the action of his legs."
Okay.
"If, therefore, we can restrain this movement of the horse's crest, we disable him from advancing by moving his legs."
Huh.
So, his theory is, he's noticed that when horses walk, their heads move. So his theory is, if a horse's head can't move, it can't walk.
That has... Wow, I can't wait to see how he finds out that that's wrong.
"Enter the bit and the rein."
Now, that's not what bits and reins do, but...
"The bit is a steel bar held in a horse's mouth by the rein, a leather strap between the bit and the hand of the rider. By using the hand to grip the rein, the rider can exert pressure on the bit to control movement of horse's head." Does any of that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, good. Because I don't have an alternative explanation. Just kidding, we have Charles's own words.
I was gonna say.
"The rider holds the rein in his hands and may, if he can pull it with sufficient strength, keep the horse's head by main force in such a position that he cannot extend his neck."
Main force.
Horse joke.
Is that really how he thinks the reins work?
Yes, and worse yet, I think he might be right.
I don't think he's right.
Well, we'll leave that to the equestrians. Write in, won't you? Thank you. AntiquesFreaksPodcast@gmail.com.
Ken, I have bad news for you.
Uh-huh.
My Little Pony wasn't real, so we're not going to hear from the equestrians.
Only the freaks in My Little Pony wore bridles.
It's pretty much just Rarity, I think.
Yeah, because she a freak.
Anyway!
"And if you can do this, whether by forcibly drawing down the horse's nose to his chest, or by compelling him to raise it into the air, there can be no doubt that you will effectually prevent any ordinary horse from either walking, trotting, or galloping."
The extraordinary horse, however, now we have questions.
So this, you'd think, would be the end of the instruction on the rein.
No, because you need to tell me how to move it.
Except, in Charles Spencer March Phillips' own words, "This, it is quite clear, is physically impossible."
What?
"The neck of the smallest pony is far stronger than the arms of the strongest man, even if assisted by the weight of his shoulders."
I'm not sure that's true either.
It is absolutely true.
I've seen
I challenge you to go fight a pony. I'll wait.
I mean, I will, and I'm pretty sure I'll win.
I will send my condolences to your family.
All right, thank you. That's all I ask.
The strongest man will therefore fail in restraining by main force the action of his horse.
Okay.
There is no man strong enough to defeat the pony.
So, is the next part, like, I guess stop riding them then. This seems useless.
Futile.
A futile exercise in trying to ride a horse.
You cannot resist the horse. It is true, no doubt, that the rider has certain odds in his favor. He can pull at the rein with all his strength, whereas the horse, if he pulls very hard at the bit, is likely to suffer pain from its pressure. The inexperienced horseman may therefore flatter himself that he will be able to control his horse by main force, not because the horse is physically unable to overpower him, but because he will be afraid of hurting himself in making the attempt. This, however, will be found a very dangerous mistake.
Oh my god, because the horse is going to find out where you live.
Exactly.
It's going to ask around. It's going to come.
To your house?
To your house and kill you, yeah.
There is no truth whatsoever in the common superstition that the mouths of some horses are naturally light and those of others naturally hard.
All right, well, you got one thing right.
If the horse head is drawn in towards the chest, more of the bit will press on the horse's gums and mouth, and that will produce more pressure or pain for the horse. Yes?
Yeah, that sucks, but yeah.
If the horse head is thrust out or thrown high, more of the bit will slip up towards the corners of the horse mouth, which results in less pressure or pain for the horse.
Right.
Therefore, there is no such thing as a horse that is naturally more sensitive, aka light, or less sensitive, aka hard, to bit pressure. There are only such things as horses who have or have not learned the trick of how to move the bit to less sensitive areas of their mouths.
Huh.
There are only stupid horses and slightly smarter horses.
That part feels very true, yes.
Yes. Or, as Charles himself puts it, a horse which always carries his neck curved and his head vertical will therefore always be light in the hand, and a horse which can contrive always to carry his neck stiff and his head horizontal may defy any horseman in the world to regulate his pace or control his direction.
You know, I say that on Tinder sometimes.
Do you?
Yeah, I defy any man to try to regulate my pace.
Please actually put that in your Tinder profile. Please.
I am a clever one, and I have learned how to move the bit to a less sensitive area of my mouth.
The right swipes will roll in.
Yeah, for all the worst reasons.
We may, however, be thankful that there is no such horse as this in existence.
Oh, a mythical horse. Legendary horse.
D is unicorn.
That is me. This got me fucked up. Imagine if you're like, I really need to learn how to do this. And this guy spends like two paragraphs scaring the shit out of you going like, imagine this. It overpowers you at every second. It's smarter than you. It married your wife without you looking. And then it's just like, eh, that's not real. Not a real concern. Don't worry about it.
That's also the second time in this chapter that he's pulled this.
Yeah, like, he just keeps making, like, he keeps setting these unwinnable situations for me. I'm like, oh gosh, what if I never learn anything? You will, it's fine, that's not real. I don't even know, like, I spent all this time talking about it.
No horse can execute any pace without stretching and relaxing his neck with the action of his legs, and therefore, no horse can execute any pace without becoming, at momentary intervals, comparatively sensitive to the bit.
Okay.
And therefore, a horseman who knows how to take advantage of this, by yielding his hands when the horse extends himself, so that he is able to resist the bit, and by pulling the rein when the horse bends or contracts himself so that he becomes sensitive to the bit, is able to regulate the paces of any horse in the world.
Any horse!
Any horse!
Except for the legendary horse, which he's previously described.
So, basically, horse head, move down. You pull in, horse head move up, you release. And you keep pulling and releasing as the horse takes its step and bobs its head. Yes?
Okay.
To return to Charles Spencer March Phillips' own words, the practice of this invaluable knack is commonly known as giving and taking.
Yeah, I have no notes. It's perfect. Why don't you just publish that, sir? Why don't you just put that? Yeah, no. It's fine. No, you're right. It's fine.
The whole equestrian art may be said to consist in these two simple words.
And again, ding, ding, ding.
Which really means he could have just published two words on a single piece of paper and accomplished everything this book has set out to do. But whatever.
No, he had to constantly bait and switch you into thinking you couldn't do it.
He had to knock you down so he could build you back up?
Yeah, exactly.
The horseman, whose delicate tact enables him never to risk a pull which the horse is prepared to resist, and never miss a pull which the horse is unprepared to resist, is absolutely perfect.
Perfect. Perfection.
His horse can make no movement which he will not foresee, and therefore none which he cannot, if necessary, baffle.
That's setting up a really good relationship with the horse, it sounds like.
Baffle your horse. Okay, real talk though, like, horses' brains, like, proportional to the rest of their skull.
Well, yeah, it's shameful in size, but...
Imagine a creature whose brain is about the size of its eyeball.
Yeah. Probably functions less, like accurately.
It's just... I do not feel that baffling such a creature.
No, I don't... Well, actually, I think you could baffle such a creature pretty easily.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't think it's terribly difficult.
Yeah, you just show it a paper bag, and it's like, ah, oh, shit!
You flap a balloon near its hindquarters and it freaks its entire bean. Which is literally the size of a bean.
Now you're exaggerating. It's the size of a, like, fistful of beans.
It's my favorite Western.
Yeah, Fistful of Beans is a really good series. Gotta check that out.
Charles Spencer March Phillips has some more advice.
I bet he does.
Take particular care that your shoulders, elbows, and wrists are perfectly supple. And prepared to play loosely with every movement of the horse's head.
Wiggle it. Wiggle with it.
Wiggle as you baffle. There are two causes which usually prevent the acquisition of a perfect bridle hand. One, the unsteadiness of the rider's seat. And two, the habit of pulling at the reins by the weight of the bust instead of by the play of the arms.
If I had a nickel for every time someone told me that.
You would owe someone a nickel?
I certainly nickels would be exchanged somewhere.
No man can give and take as he ought.
While... yeah? On God?
While he is being jolted about in his saddle, nor yet...
yeah, okay.
Nor yet while his body is hanging upon and supported by his bridle.
I don't know. Sounds like he's in a prime position to be taking.
Dean, how? Do not be deluded by the indiscriminate praise usually bestowed upon a light bridle hand.
Okay, I'll try.
A light hand is a good thing, but only when it is effective as well as light.
Ooh.
The first merit of the hand is to command the horse. The second is to do so without unnecessarily annoying him.
Hey, cool, hot take. I think this guy has a hard time with that part.
Nor ought the hand to be light when the horse resists it.
Well, the third thing is to give carrot with hand, right?
A hand which is always light will be as ineffective as a hand which is always heavy.
All right.
The hand of a horseman should resemble the temper of a commander, pleasant while obeyed, formidable if disobeyed.
All right.
Nobody cares for the man who always smiles any more than for the man who always scolds.
Well, it sounds like you're talking a lot of personal preference here, sir, but I don't want to judge.
Listen, when it comes to giving and taking, Charles Spencer March Phillips knows exactly what he wants.
A commander.
Yes.
The perfect commander.
The perfect commander with a bridle hand that is neither indiscriminately light nor constantly heavy.
Hey, same.
He wants a sting and a thud.
Oh, boy, yeah. All right, hey, next. What else? What else does he say?
I give you no special rules for leaping. What? If you are cool enough.
I am so cool, sir.
Not to change or stiffen your attitude as your horse rises, you will naturally sit steady in your saddle. And if you sit steady in your saddle, you will naturally handle your horse as you ought.
Is literally his advice right now for what might be the most dangerous part of handling a horse, that just be cool, dude?
Yes.
Just chill. Like,
just fucking chill for a second and don't fall off.
I could use some more, sir, please.
A flying leap is nothing more than a stride in the horse's gallop of extraordinary height and width.
Yeah, well, it's the extraordinary that's got me fucked up, sir.
And a standing leap is nothing more than the commencement of his gallop with such a stride.
Yeah, and yet, here we are, I would like to do it better.
If, therefore, you know how to give and take properly,
well,
and if the unusual effort which the horse is making has not disturbed your seat so far as to disable you from giving and taking properly, you have no further difficulty to overcome.
So his jumping chapter is literally just like, whatever, fucking calm down.
His jumping chapter is a paragraph that is maybe 4 sentences long.
Yeah, that says, like, would you calm down?
Just chill.
Just chill.
Just chill and don't fall off, and you're fine. Thus brings us to the end of Horse and Man for now.
Well...
So that's the second chapter. So now we know how to use butt on horse and how to use hand on horse.
We know fuck all about jumping with horse.
We know everything there is to know about jumping with horse, according to Charles Spencer March Phillips.
I guess.
And listen, if a man with 4 names doesn't know how to jump a horse, I don't know who does.
I also know a lot about the sort of man he prefers the company of.
I mean, you know. Thoughts, questions, concerns?
Yeah, concerns? Yeah, geez, like a lot.
How ready do you feel to ride a horse?
Oh, so ready.
So ready?
Yeah, if I just chill out, apparently everything will work out.
1, chill out, and 2, baffle it.
Yeah, that was you got the 2 things I'm super good at.
Being chill and baffling?
Chill out, baffle a creature.
Just baffle it with your extraordinary chillness.
Yeah, I'm like so calm, and the horse is like, I'm jumping like off a cliff. What? You should be agitated, and I'm like, I'm not even bothered. I got the same stance. I got the same hand. My butt's staying where it's planted until we hit the ground.
Until we get to chapter 3.
Until we get to chapter 3, which, how do I land this horse?
So your horse has jumped.
Yeah.
Here's step 2. Oh, man.
I suspect it's going to be, you can't land the horse. Oh, God, you're going to die. Just kidding. That's not what happens.
It is impossible to land a horse, or it would be, unless you know this one cool trick.
Yeah, it would be if the horse had no legs.
God, it is kind of a crime that Charles Spencer March Phillips died before clickbait titles, because I feel like he would have been amazing.
He would have been the best at clickbait titles. Like, what could have happened next will astound you. Just kidding. Like,
this horse would amaze you if it existed.
It would be incredible. You're gonna kill your roommate and throw a baby down the stairs when you read these 4 things horses can do to you if they were real.
Is that the twist at the end of the book? Charles Spencer March Phillips reveals that horses don't exist.
There's no such thing as a horse. All of this advice would have been great if the creatures I had described in the book existed.
So if you would like chapter 3 of Horse and Man, please write to us at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, we're going to make you beg for each increment.
Or send us a message at facebook.com/antiquesfreaks. And join our group, Antiques Freaks Friends. Post your furniture. Post your thrifting finds. Post your cool antique news.
Post your posts. Like architectural posts. That joke fell flat. If you like the sound of our voices in your ears today, consider scrolling on down to wherever you're listening to this podcast and leaving us a 5-star review. The 5-star is a suggestion. Technically, any review would help. But I think that the 5-star is the most emotionally fulfilling one for both of us.
If you would like more horse, please tell us. More horse, please. Yeah. Or some variation upon that phrase.
Leave us a review that just says, horse? Question mark. 5 stars, though.
If you would like to purchase some vintage goods, you can check out our Etsy at etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks. And if you would like to listen to deleted scenes, we have a Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks. And while you are there, you can join the Random Vintage Postcard of the Month Club, where we send you a random vintage postcard every month.
Sure, to control and baffle.
Special shout out to our current patrons for paying our hosting fees and getting us ever closer to our goal of releasing bonus episodes.
We love you.
Very much.
More than horses.
More than horses.
If they were real.
And thank you, in particular, for listening.
Especially you.
Goodbye.
Bye.